The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
So welcome to everybody to the Buddha Loka Centre here at the Buddhist Society of Victoria on a pretty chilly night. Not so chilly if you're on the internet, actually probably at home, nice and cosy. Not too bad here, so that's good. And just to introduce myself, I am Ajahn Nisarana, for those who haven't seen me before. And I am the senior monk at Newbury Buddhist Monastery, which is the monastery associated with the Buddhist Society of Victoria. And I've been a monk for 25 years, a fully ordained monk for 25 years. And I am a student or disciple of Ajahn Brahm. I think most people know Ajahn Brahm, very famous. And I spent 13 and a half years in Sri Lanka, and that was a very valuable time, especially 8.5 years living in a cave, so that was great. Beautiful place, so marvellous. And as usual, this evening we'll have the format is an introduction and then a guided meditation to follow, and then comments, questions or complaints. So that's that comes afterwards. And the theme for this evening will of course be what I talked about yesterday. Was anybody here yesterday for the talk? Online, yeah. So it was about generosity and recollecting our generosity, which the Buddha actually recommended for us to do. And it's a great practice for bringing up energy and bringing up inspiration and joy. That's the main purpose of it. So I'll start with a nice quote that I used yesterday, but I'll put and somebody really liked it, actually. They told me, oh, it was a great quote. And this is a quote that I like too. If you want to get, you may not get. But if you want to give, who can stop you? Isn't that great? It's really good. So it's very true. If we want to give, it's a powerful thing. But if we want to get, of course, it's usually associated with a negative a side of our mind, defilements, you know, what we want and all this sort of thing. But when we're giving, it's quite the reverse. We can be very pure-hearted and without the defilements, reduce them at least. So this is good. So that's a nice quotation. If we want to get, we may not get, but if we want to give, who can stop us? That's great. So I was going to talk about these, first of all, give you an introduction to the recollections. There's a series of recollections that the Buddha taught and that are intended for bringing joy, bringing inspiration to our practice of meditation and to our lives too. And these are called anusatis, the various anusatis. And this means mindfulness along with whatever the subject is. So we have the recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, so that's three of them. And then we have the recollection of our morality or ethical conduct, and that's called silanusati. And we have recollection of our generosity, and the recollection of the devas. Now that's an interesting one, which I will teach probably next month or the month after. And these recollections, I've taught the Buddha, recollection on the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha last month. And one of the Sangha, the recollection on the Sangha I did here as well. So this recollection, these are the six main recollections. But there's four more that some of them you'll be familiar with. Of course, mindfulness of breathing is called a recollection, and mindfulness of the body, and of course, mindfulness of death and recollection of peace. And those are the four extra ones. The first six very specifically aimed at bringing up inspiration, bringing up joy. The other four, they can actually, definitely mindfulness of the breath, and these other subjects can as well. Even, unbelievably, mindfulness of death can bring up some joy. And these recollections, as I mentioned yesterday, they're not just beginners' meditation themes or meditation subjects. The Buddha actually mentions that when they're developed and cultivated, they lead exclusively to turning away, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, and to nirvana. So they're quite serious. They've got very good results. And of course, just to mention, as I did yesterday, this turning away is really seeing the impermanence of a lot of where we're looking for happiness out in the world and all the desire that comes up due to that, looking for our happiness out there. And when we see the impermanence of it, we can let go of some of that desire, some of that craving, some of that wanting, some of that expecting. And then, of course, this viraga, this dispassion, this is a fading away of this wanting, this desire, this craving, and then cessation to the ending of it. And when we finish, this is unbelievable, when we finish wanting all the desires, all the craving, we come to peace. And with that peace, we can discover the direct knowledges. These are the insights and the direct knowledges that lead to enlightenment. And once we're enlightened, then the path, we can follow the path to nibbana. And that happens, parinibbana happens. When the body ceases, then the mind can cease too. So these recollections aimed at that. So it's really important. And as I mentioned, they bring up this inspiration and joy in our lives. I think there's probably nobody here who thinks, I don't need inspiration, I don't need joy. These are obviously very, very big things in our lives, which really can give us energy in our lives. And of course, the main purpose that the Buddha was teaching these is for the meditation. But the meditation, of course, is a conditioning for our lives. It's not just for being when we're on the time, when the time we spend on the cushion. So this is important. And the thing you'll see when I read out the how the Buddha describes it, that it really sets off or sets in motion an automatic process that leads to the mind coming together. This is samadhi. So these are very these recollections very, very useful. And for all meditators, you know, there comes a time when they say, I've heard this very often, you know, wow, you know, things, it's very peaceful, the meditation's very peaceful, but it's not going anywhere. I just feel like it's, you know, plateauing. And this is a time when we can use these recollections actually to bring up inspiration or inspiration and joy. And I call these fuel for the meditation, fuel for our minds, fuels for happiness. So first of all, I'll read out the Buddha's description of these things. And this is quite an interesting teaching the Buddha gives, because you'll see at the end of it, it's aimed at all people. It talks about developing this in lay life, and developing it at home, a home full of children. Interesting. Developing it when we're sitting, walking, standing, or lying down. So it's a all-purpose recollection. And this teaching starts out with his cousin, Mahanama, who asks him about, and this is very appropriate for us, really. Now, we spend our life in various ways. Which of these should we practice, the various ways? And then the Buddha talks about what he talks about. Which of these should we practice? And he says, this is the preamble, but it's an important one, actually. The faith, the faithful, those with faith, not, what to say? Ah, yes, those with faith, not those without faith, succeed. The energetic succeed, not the lazy. The mindful succeed, not the unmindful. Those with stillness or samadhi, one-pointedness, succeed, not those without these. And the wise succeed, not those without wisdom. when you're grounded on these five things, then we can develop six further things. And these are the recollections, of course, but I'm only going to read out the one on generosity. So these five things that the Buddha is talking about is faith, energy, mindfulness, stillness or samadhi, one-pointedness, and wisdom. And I think many people would recognize that as the faculties of the mind that are very important for developing enlightenment. So this is a very interesting way to say that when we do these recollections, it's good if we've developed this mindfulness and all these qualities, very useful. And then this is the actual recollection and of our generosity. And it says, furthermore, having talked about four others before this, you should recollect your own generosity. I'm so fortunate, so very fortunate, among people full of the stain of stinginess. I live at home rid of the stain of stinginess. So this is letting go of or being rid of negative qualities, because stinginess really, doesn't it? It closes us down. It really closes us down. And we're so focused when we are stingy on what we need, what we want, and all these things. And of course, this is a very small world and also a world that doesn't have much joy, because there's also a lot of fear associated with, will I get what I want? That sort of thing. And the Buddha continues, this is a positive side, freely generous, open-handed, loving to let go. That's an interesting translation, loving to let go. Committed to charity and loving to give and share. So this is somebody developing a real happiness from giving, from generosity, a real energy from it. And then he continues. So these are good qualities, actually very positive qualities. And when a noble disciple recollects their own generosity, their mind is not full of greed, hate and delusion. These are the negative qualities. At that time, their mind is unswerving based on their generosity. And when this translation says unswerving, what makes our mind swerve? The defilements, wanting, not wanting. That's sort of the negativity in the mind. So this is a mind free of those qualities, those negative qualities. And then it goes on, a noble disciple whose mind is unswerving finds inspiration in the meaning of generosity, that it's got purpose and that it fuels our meditation and our life. So this is the meaning from generosity. And also from the teaching, they find inspiration and they find joy connected with the teachings. And then, and of course, when we have inspiration and joy, it gives us energy to actually practice those teachings. And then when they are joyful, rapture arises. And this is, of course, in the Pali, it's piti. And this is the experience of an energy in this energy in the body that can be extraordinarily strong or very, very refined. A feeling in the it feels like a bodily feeling, but it's actually something that you usually only experience in meditation. So it can't be really bodily, but it can be like waves of energy going through the body, it can be very powerful, can be very pleasant, can be very mild. And then from that, when the mind is full of rapture, the body becomes tranquil. It becomes peaceful. For many meditators, it disappears. And they can think, oh my goodness, the body's gone. It can bring up fear, so that's not such a good thing. Or it can bring up excitement too. Oh fantastic. And that's not so good too, because it disturbs the meditation, both of those. And then when the body is tranquil, they feel bliss or feel happiness. This is sukha. And this is a natural consequence when the body and the mind really, really peaceful and let go of them. When we're free of them, then there's a lot of happiness. As I say, as I mentioned yesterday, when people have out-of-body experiences or they have near-death experiences, they usually, when they leave the body, the mind feels very happy. Sometimes not so happy to come back. Often, because if the body has been very sick, you know, it's very unpleasant. You're coming back to a very sick body, a body that's almost died. So this is letting go of the body. And then when they're blissful, when the mind has got this happiness, then the mind becomes immersed in samadhi. It comes together, one-pointed, because it has all this happiness, all this joy, this tranquility, peace, this happiness inside. And so this becomes the focus that brings the mind together. And the mind, as I say, it comes together, yeah. And you should develop this recollection of your own generosity while walking, standing, sitting, or lying down. So pretty much 24/7, it's useful. And while working and while at home with your children. One other translation mentions, I think it's Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation mentions, in your home full of children. And I thought that's quite nice, actually. So just to mention a few comments before we start the meditation, that generosity is a quality that we all have. It's a part of human nature. You see it in animals too, don't you, really? It is there. And people they have got this generosity in their nature. It's like loving kindness. We all have it. But of course, the Buddha often focuses on these very positive emotions and shows us how we can develop them, make them into a real source of for our spiritual practice, a fuel for it. But it's important to remember, and I know this is true, particularly in the West, that we won't be perfect when we think about, recollect our generosity. Sometimes people, when you ask them to think about the good things they've done, what comes up? The things that they're not happy with often, you know, and all those things. But even though we're not perfect, we can still remember these times of when we're generous, and that's important. And one of the things, even though the Buddha is talking about our own generosity, sometimes I notice it with myself, when we see somebody else being generous, wow, that can have a really inspiring effect on us, especially if we witness it personally. Sometimes you see videos or you read about it, but it's not as strong as if you see someone doing something really generous and you can really feel this inspiration. It can be very inspiring to see when somebody is generous. And very important, particularly in the West, is because people think, if you think about all the good things you've done, your generosity, all this, that you'll get a big ego, that you will maybe be bragging about your good deeds. But of course, this is a recollection we're doing for ourselves. We're not advertising. We're not putting it on Facebook or any of this, not making YouTube videos about how good we are. But we're using it for our practice, so that's important. And of course, when we do this, what happens? We feel good about ourselves and we feel a sense of self-worth or self-esteem. So these are all very valuable things to develop in ourselves. And of course, the more we reflect on generosity, the more we reflect on giving, the more that will encourage us to give and to be generous, to see the value in it. And of course, I mentioned that often in Buddhist countries you see a lot of giving and generosity. And the thing that you experience, or I've experienced, is you can see how happy people are when they do it, because they're doing it very personally, you know, giving with their own hands, making food or whatever. And that happiness, when you see it, you think, yeah, that looks good. That I would like to have that happiness myself. So it'd be a very good role model for us. And certainly living in Sri Lanka for 13 and a half years, I saw quite a bit of it. And I see it here too. So this is very good for our happiness and inspiration and developing this generosity and giving. And of course, what things can we give? Of course, material things, very important, especially if somebody's in need. They need food, they need clothing, shelter, they need medicines at time of sickness. So those things, very important to give. But one of the most important things these days, I think everybody would probably think this too, what's the most important thing that one can give that's not material? Anyone got any ideas? Friendship. Time is what I was thinking. That includes friendship, really, because these days people are, they say, time poor, don't they? You hear this quite a bit now. And of course, when we have time, we can give kindness, we can give friendship, and we can give attention, advice if it's asked for, and humour. This is a great gift. I think of Ajahn Brahm. He really can give give a lot in terms of humour. And humour is a great way to help people let go. It's a very good way. And of course, one of the most important material, non-material things that we can give is Dhamma, sharing what we understand about the Buddha's teachings, about the nature of life. And we call this Dhamma Dana. And this is what Ajahn Brahm is doing and what I hope to do too. So this is something we can do for others as well, you know, for our spiritual friends, Kalyanamitas, for anyone we meet. Because the Buddha's teaching is about life. Dhamma is about life. And so that is something we can share with others. So I'd like to talk just a bit about using it in meditation. And as I mentioned, these wholesome states of mind, very useful for the meditation because they help us to let go of negative states of mind and they help us to develop and maintain positive states of mind, which the Buddha calls right effort. So this is very good. Some people think it might be wishful thinking or, you know, that we're pretending, but it isn't. It has to be genuine feeling that comes up for us. And as I mention often, we're driven by feeling. Human beings are driven by feeling. And so one of the ways, the most important ways we can develop our generosity is through the perception of the value of giving. That is an important perception. Our lives also run by perceptions, how we perceive things. If we think that giving and generosity has no value, well, we won't do it. We won't do it. But if we see it as being valuable, then we will do more of it. And this is a very important thing. Whatever we see value in, then we will make much more of it. And the point is, when we see the value in it, we can use it as part of the spiritual practice. And that is what this recollection is aimed at, really, making it part of our spiritual practice. And we're doing it really consciously, almost deliberately, developing in that way, bringing up inspiration and joy in our meditation and in our lives. So this is very useful for the meditation, as I say. So we can, I think we may, and I'll just mention an example because, and that's true. An example of this is from the time of the Buddha. He had a disciple called, she was the foremost, they have all this foremost things, you know, foremost disciple, the Buddha said, female disciple was Visakha. And she, I think when she first met the Buddha, she became a stream enterer, first stage enlightenment. Not bad, not bad. And one time she went to the Buddha and she asked the Buddha for 8 favors. She wanted to offer 8 different things to the monks and the nuns. And the Buddha said to her that Buddhas are beyond granting favors. But by the way, what do you want to ask? And she told him what she wanted to offer. And he said, well, what is the benefit in offering those things? And a very practical benefit, she mentions. And then he said, well, what's the practice? What is the benefit for you, the Anisangsa, for you, Visakha? And she said to the Buddha, well, you know, if I hear, I offer these 8 things to monks and nuns in this city, Savatthi is where she lived, she said, and I hear that a monk or a nun has passed away and they've become, they've achieved a stage of enlightenment, become an arahant, then I will know that if they came to this city, I will know they will have had one of my gifts that I have given. And she says, when I know this or when I remember it, I shall be glad. And when I'm glad, I shall be joyful. When my mind is joyful, my body will be tranquil. When my body is tranquil, I shall feel happiness. And when I feel happiness, my mind will become unified or still. And this will bring the development of the spiritual faculties in me, the ones I mentioned first, which are faith or conviction, energy, mindfulness, stillness, and wisdom. And then she says, and also the spiritual powers, which is those qualities, intensified, and the enlightenment factors. So this is very serious. It's going towards enlightenment, and they are mindfulness, investigation of mind states, energy, joy, tranquility, stillness, equanimity, and they're leading to enlightenment. And when the Buddha heard that, he said, good, good, Visakha, I grant you these 8 favors, that she could offer these things to the monks and nuns. And so this was a good example of how to use this recollection to develop the meditation, to bring up that happiness, not only for the meditation, in our lives too. So it's very good. It's one of the best antidepressants, giving and generosity. The trouble is, when we are depressed or in negative mind states, it's hard to think of giving, isn't it? That's the problem, I think. So now we can do the recollection of our generosity. We can try this and see if it brings up that joy, that inspiration and joy, which leads to the stillness in the mind and leads to freedom. So we can make ourselves comfortable and close the eyes. And we can let the past be, let the future be, and just be here now with nothing that we need to do and nowhere we need to go for the moment. Just being here now. And we can make any adjustments to the body that we need. Check out if the body is comfortable, if it's balanced. Just feeling what the body needs. And we can mentally relax the body, giving the body a mental massage. We can start at the top of the head, or the head and the face really, and give this warm, relaxing, soothing attention to the head and the face. especially around those areas like the eyes and the mouth. They do a lot of work. And we can move the attention to the neck, all around the neck, and give this warm, kind attention to the neck. Now bringing to mind the right shoulder, starting at the neck and moving along the right shoulder, giving the right shoulder this mental massage with warmth and kindness. And now bringing to mind the right arm, starting at the top of the arm and moving our attention down the arm, down to the fingers and the hand, giving the right arm this warm, relaxing, soothing mental massage. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder, starting at the neck and moving our attention along the left shoulder, soothing and relaxing the left shoulder. Now bringing to mind the left arm, starting at the shoulder and moving our attention down the left arm to the hand and fingers, giving this relaxing, soothing mental massage. Now bringing to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention down the back with this warm, kind, relaxing attention, soothing the back. Now bringing to mind the front of the body, starting at the shoulders and moving our attention down the front of the body to include the chest, stomach and abdomen, giving this gentle, warm, caring mental massage to the front of the body. And now we can bring to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and moving our attention down the left leg, right down to the toes, the feet and toes, with this warm, relaxing mental massage. And now we can bring to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and moving our attention down to the foot and toes all around the right leg, giving it this warm, kind, relaxing attention. Now we can bring to mind the whole body just sitting here comfortably balanced in the present moment. And we can reflect on our intention for the meditation to recollect our generosity or the generosity of someone else, to see if it brings up this inspiration and joy. So in order to do that, we can bring to mind an occasion when we were generous. We felt good about that giving, that generosity. Maybe it was to a family member, a friend, an acquaintance, or even a stranger. And maybe we did that spontaneously. Perhaps they were needed some help, needed some assistance. Or we can think of some other person's generosity, their giving, that really, really touched us as well. Just recollecting an occasion we were generous, or another person, their generosity, how it touched us. and we can get in contact, see if there's a feeling coming up for us, and get in contact with that feeling, if it's coming up for us. Whatever the feeling is, maybe it's a warm feeling, uplifting feeling, a feeling of inspiration, of lightness, of satisfaction, whatever feeling comes up for us. And when we notice the breath coming in and going out, we can give this feeling, whatever it be, of warmth, of inspiration, uplift, to the breath coming in, and then breathing, when a breath goes out, to the world, breathing in this emotion and breathing it out. And when we do this, it makes the breath much more attractive, much easier to stay with, much more interesting. Just breathing in this feeling that we've experienced and breathing it out. And if the feeling reduces, we can just remember what brought it up in the first case at the beginning. To refresh it. And now, as we're coming close to the end of the meditation, we can share whatever feelings or energy we experienced in the meditation, and we can share that with everyone here. Maybe it was a feeling of peace, of stillness, of inspiration, joy, warmth, whatever feeling that came up for us. We can share with everyone here for their happiness, well-being, safety, for their security. And we can expand this sharing to all the beings around this hall, this center, whether they be human beings, animals, insects, all the beings, this feeling, whatever it was, for their happiness and well-being. And we can keep spreading, expanding this feeling to cover the whole world and all beings everywhere. Sharing what we've experienced with them. And now we can review the meditation, reflect on the meditation. How do I feel now at the end of the meditation? What feelings came up for me? Or if they didn't come up for me? Whether it was warmth, this inspiration, uplift, sense of being connected to others, of kindness. And we can reflect on what brought this up for us, what caused it to come up, the feelings, whatever we experienced. And we can reflect too if recollecting like this has changed our view or had an impact on our view, our perception of giving and generosity, the importance of it. And we can finish with an aspiration or intention to develop more of this recollection of our generosity or others' generosity so that it encourages us to see generosity, as giving, as an opportunity to share, to bring up these positive emotions through our actions, through our speech, and in our minds. And now I'll ring the bell three times, and on the third time, if you'd like to come out of meditation, you're welcome to. So, here we are. So, that is the recollection of generosity, Chaganusati, and it's an important meditation for bringing happiness, for bringing inspiration and joy to our minds. And I know Ajahn Brahm, for instance, he says that's an energy that he runs on a lot, Chaganusati, reflecting on all that he's given to people. And of course that's giving through his teaching, as I mentioned, through his humour. And that gives him a lot of inspiration, a lot of joy. And he has, he has cases where people write to him, or they communicate, they speak to him, and they say that his teaching, what he shared with them, has saved their lives. I mean, that's wonderful when you touch somebody so much that you've turned their lives around. And this is what the Buddha called the miracle of teaching or instruction. But some people have more of it than others. And I know he used to collect, letters and things like that, or cards where people thanked him for his teaching and so on, so he could reflect on it for that purpose. And recently we had a teaching by Ajahn Brahmali, who's like the second monk at Ajahn Brahm's monastery. He said he does the same. And it's very natural when you receive some of these cards. I do receive some, not as much as Ajahn Brahm. I think it got too much for him. He ended up with a large amount of these letters. But it brings up that feeling of happiness, inspiration, joy, satisfaction that, one is contributing in a good way. And you realize how much the way we see the world can be changed in a positive direction. How much is often from a negative direction, that we receive from society, that the society we live in, the time we live in. There's a lot of negative influences. We see what's happening in the news, and it's often not good news that we read. So this brings up some balance in the mind, much needed joy and inspiration. So I'd like to open up for any questions from the floor. See you Paul, see you Henry. So if you have any questions about this or any other aspect of the Dhamma, how this relates, yes, please do. I think there's a microphone, so people online can hear it, if you don't mind speaking. Otherwise they hear this.
Thank you for that meditation. Do you think this meditation can help with the negativity that we can show ourselves as human beings? Because often we can beat ourselves up.
Yes, for sure.
A lot. And I just wonder, as well as thinking about generosity to others, whether this meditation can help be generous to the self.
Yes. I think that's the main benefit, really, when we're recollecting generosity. We get the benefit, actually. And others get the benefit if it encourages to do more, to reach out to them more. Because when we develop that generosity, it can bring up a sense of caring for ourselves and for others, actually. And this is compassion, really. And this is what we're doing, really, for ourselves, because this recollection can give us the energy within our minds, this joy, this inspiration. So we're the ones that will mainly experience it. But anything that really touches us deeply will also affect people around us, because then, you know, we will act and speak from that state of that feeling, from that experience. So when we have this feeling of generosity and giving, it does bring up, you know, a lot more awareness of the opportunities. And this is what, in traditional Buddhist countries, it's amazing. I mean, in the West, people won't believe this. People say they do all these things. They offer you food and they offer you all these things and whatnot. They offer to monks and nuns. And then they say, thank you for the opportunity. It's unbelievable. But when we develop this a perception of giving and generosity, the value of it, how it can bring uplift to us, bring inspiration, then, yeah, we see it as an opportunity, and we look for opportunities to help. And there's plenty of opportunities, really. And, you know, we all have friends and relatives, acquaintances, people at work or wherever we find ourselves that are in need of this sort of generosity in giving, maybe in just in terms of someone to listen to them, because usually most people are so busy, not much time, not much space for others. And so for someone to be actually able to give that attention, that time, it can be a real gift, you know. And just a smile sometimes can be really, really wonderful. A genuine smile can really touch people and be a real gift. So there's many, many opportunities. And as I say, the more we develop this perception of the value in giving and generosity, the more opportunities will open up. I know some people, I've seen it on the internet, they have these like this idea of every day for a year giving something to someone and doing that as a sort of deliberate, conscious thing, you know, when they see the opportunity to develop this sort of happiness from giving and from generosity. And it really can turn the mind around, because our minds need a good balance. Unfortunately, we tend to go the other way. The more information we get, the more we're on the front line of the Ukraine or wherever, you know, we see all this almost firsthand, you know, there's videos of everything, that this has an effect on the mind. And this balances it, because there's more than what we see in the news. If there were not, this world would have finished a long, long time ago, because there just wouldn't be enough positive, wholesome energy in the world. So it's very good to have this, develop this giving and sharing for ourselves particularly. That's where it will make the difference. And then from that difference, that will affect other, can affect other people. So thank you for that question. That's a good one. Yeah. Yes, and Sean, is there any questions online?
Yes, Ajahn. Thank you for the meditation. We have online question. Ajahn, thank you. This helped to generate a feeling of self-respect.
Oh, good.
I have been meaning to ask monastic permission to give my mom a guided meditation. She is very sick. She have a stroke.
Oh.
And now I think her mind has opened a bit more. She isn't a Buddhist, but she's starting to see, even with her diminished brain capacity, that she cannot feel happy from watching TV, etc.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, no, it's very good to do sort of a guided meditation. I think, as I understood it, she would like to do one for her mother. And I think that's very useful to do, you know. It can be on a number of different areas, you know, but perhaps loving kindness, metta is a good one. Being our own best friend, that could be a good one for her mother. And the fact that she may, because she's got diminished, because of the stroke, maybe diminished ability to To do things, I would say, and make movement and speech perhaps. And so then to share, when we have that at the end of the meditation, when we share the loving kindness, or in this case the feeling from giving and generosity, when we share it with others, that may help her too to feel like she can still give, still affect people through her mind. And of course this is very much the case. And I mean, I always see, you know, you see people like what was his name, the famous mathematician who was in a wheelchair and could only... Stephen Hawking. I mean, you know, it's really amazing. You know, he couldn't communicate. He had to have that computer voice to communicate with the world. Incredible. What a contribution he made. And so, you know, this can give you her mother, give you your mother some, you know, sort of energize and empower her to feel, yes, I can still affect people, I can still give to people, and that giving can bring a lot of happiness to her. And of course, you know, when we give a loving kindness, when we give this metta, when we give caring, we develop this feeling in ourselves and share it with others, that's a real gift. There's so many gifts that of these positive emotions, actually, that we can share. And it will lift her mind. And as I say, you know, she'll feel that she's doing something useful for others. So this can be very good, a guided meditation. And she can either give one herself or find some on the internet. There's plenty of guided meditations that may be appropriate. But I think she will know the best one for her mother, because she knows her mother. And it's very true. As we get old, as we come to, approach death, because these bodies must die one day, that's the nature of bodies. And in Buddhism, the mind will tend to move on until it's seen the nature of reality and can stop once and for all. But usually minds move on. So to use while we have the life in this body for a good purpose is wonderful, to develop good states of mind, because those qualities, the good states of mind, we take them with us when we move on to a new life. We don't want to take the rubbish. You can't take Scrabble, you can't take all these other things that people, bingo, that people tend to occupy themselves with. They're interesting, amusing and so forth, but they're not sustaining. They're enjoyable for that time. But if we develop qualities like being kind, loving kindness, caring, giving and sharing, all these sorts of things, then these are qualities, when we go to a new life, they will be in the mind, and they will be something that will be useful for that life, actually, anytime, really, anywhere. So this idea of developing spiritually, cultivating spiritually the mind, very, very, very useful, yeah. So it's good, yeah. So yes, that would be great. And
thank you, Ajahn. We have time for another question.
Another time, yes.
So Ajahn, my question today is, how to give generosity to a toxic relationship that caused so much suffering? I found it very hard.
Yes, I think that is a challenge, actually, to be give and to be generous in a toxic relationship. I think in many ways, for people in those sort of situations, they have to look and decide whether it's really worthwhile staying in that relationship, if it's really, really toxic. I think that's always worthwhile considering, because in the end we have to look after our own mind, our own mental health, our own bodily health too, really. And often in these toxic situations we have a choice. We can work with it and try. If we try our best, that's good. But if we come to the realization, no, it's not getting through, it's affecting me in a very negative way, then I have to, for my own well-being, withdraw, you know. And that can be something, even leaving a toxic relationship can be useful for the other person too, because then it may, just may, make them reflect on what they're doing, how they're relating, you know. So I think this is, it can be useful to just do your best, but then if you find that it's too much, one has to, you know, then decide what to do. To leave a relationship is possibly the best thing. And if it's very, very toxic, it's like these workplaces that are very toxic and stressful for people. Eventually the day comes, they think, that's it, can't do anything, can't do this anymore. And I have a friend who's just doing that, actually. She's giving up her job because it's too stressful. And she's done it for a long, long time. So it's and I think actually in that case it may make the workplace think, you know, somebody who's worked there for 30 years is now actually, you know, pulling out because of retiring early because of stress, and you know, that's too much the way that the workplace is. So it's always good. We have to look after our this body and mind, and then we can give so much more. And be much more generous. When we are, you know, come in contact with people who are very toxic, and there are a lot of very negative people in this world, I just feel, wow, I'm glad I don't live in that mind. It's an awful mind state to be trapped in. I mean, it's awful to experience that toxicity, you know, their toxic speech, toxic actions and presence. But you just think, if you were locked into that mind, you know, just that's what you, you know, they are going to experience in themselves, all those negative qualities. They come home to roost. We have to live with ourselves, don't we? And if it's a really toxic and nasty environment we're living in, it's not a pleasant place to hang out, to be in. So it's that can give rise to some compassion for that person. But if we can't help them out of that, then it's best we look after ourselves and maybe leave that relationship. We just see what we can do. We do our best. Yeah. So thank you for that question. I think it's always an important question for people. Yeah. So I think one more. I think. Three minutes to nine, according to that clock.
I joined this another question. It's similar to the previous question.
Oh, all right. Yeah, maybe the same person.
What if you know you have contributed, but others, especially your family members, still judge you in a different way?
Yes, I think if we know we have contributed and other people don't necessarily approve of it or are impressed by it or thankful for it, no worries, as long as we get the benefit for it. One of the things with giving is that if we expect people to be thankful, wow, then it can sabotage that giving, the feeling of happiness we get from giving. If we wait for appreciation, it's the same. If we're just joyful that we're giving with a good intention, no matter how the other person takes it. Sometimes, you know, you can do something really good for a person and they get upset. Unbelievable, isn't it? But it's, you know, perhaps it's toxicity, really. But it's we can only be responsible for where we're coming from, and also, you know, to not sabotage our happiness by making it depend on how others respond, and not expecting anything back from others. Because the Buddha said there are two rare people in the world, and that's one who's grateful or appreciative, thankful, and another, a person who does something without being asked spontaneously to help, to when we need something. So those two people are rare, and they still are rare in this world. We've got so much to be thankful about, but most people aren't thankful about it because we're focused on what could be better, what we need, what we want, all that sort of thing. And we miss the bigger picture, which is what we've got. And as Ajahn Brahm says, you know, contentment is not liking what you want, it's liking what you have. You know, it's not so that's the point, you know, being content with our what we already have, which is a lot more than usually the things we want or we think we need. So thank you for that, and it's a good question, so very good. So I'd like to finish there, and for those who would like to, we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Thank you very much for coming this evening. Is there any announcements? No, there's a meditation tomorrow night, isn't there? There's unguided one. And next Sunday will be Ajahn Bodhi Dajja, the Swiss monk. He'll be giving a talk. And then next Monday will be Ajahn Bodhi Dajja again. There we are. Oh, look at that.